Welcome to the Fan Pregame, brought to you by Betano. The game starts now. Ailish Forfar, Justin Cuthbert for the next hour. We got a lot of hockey on the network for you tonight, so we'll have two guests that will help tee that up. Luke Fox from Sportsnet in about 5 to 10 minutes. We've got Leafs and Flyers, the second part of a home and a home, home and a home, home and away, whatever you want to say. Sportsnet Ontario at 7:30, and then Carter Hutton around 6:30 will help us tee up the rest of it. Edmonton, Boston, Vegas, San Jose, Calgary, Anaheim. All of that on the network tonight, scattered amongst our many channels.
Yeah, a busy night. The game starts now with Betano, but like, does the playoff chase begin now? I think in a lot of ways it does, as we turn our attention a little bit more to the standings, given that we've officially reached the halfway point for at least most teams in the NHL. And Canadian teams are making things interesting. The Montreal Canadiens in particular, on a run of 8 wins in their last 10 games. 5 wins inside the division, and they beat Florida, Tampa, and Vegas and Colorado on the path to that. And it's got us thinking a little bit about who might be making the playoffs this year and whether or not we could really force the issue around here, maybe get 6 broadcast teams, potentially with 6 Canadian teams aboard. It seems a little bit unlikely, but since Montreal has come on, it's worth having the conversation, I think.
Yeah, I saw our co-host here, or our teammate here, Anna Dua, tweeted out that if every Canadian team makes the playoffs, she'll bring back the bet that she'll put maple syrup on everything she eats for 2 weeks.
Okay. So, I don't know the previous context of that, but has she done that before?
It was... Well, when was the last time all Canadian teams made the playoffs?
That's what it was about. Yeah, ago. It's been a long, long time. It certainly hasn't happened since the Winnipeg Jets came back. In fact, the most we've had is 5, and that was done twice in 2017 and 2015. But recently it's been 3 or 4, which is like a good sampling of Canadian teams, but it really would be cool if we could see 5 or 6, maybe, would be awesome. 5 or 6 would be very cool. We have at least 3, right? Toronto is a lock. Yep. Winnipeg, a lock. Both those teams are first in their divisions. Edmonton's a lock despite being third in the Pacific. And then it gets a little bit interesting because the remaining 4 teams are kind of fighting for wildcard position. I guess it's possible that they squeeze in, but it seems more likely than not that they're going to have to settle for a wild card. And I guess the problem is, or the main inhibitor to Anna Dua putting maple syrup on everything, would be the fact that, you know, Dallas and Tampa Bay are pretty much locked in as wildcard teams. Like, they're really, really good teams that have to settle for that position right now. So it'll take something pretty catastrophic from a good team in order for more space to open up. But yeah, right now it seems like Vancouver and Calgary fighting for 1 spot, and Ottawa and Montreal, despite it still being a pretty big long shot for Montreal, fighting for 1 spot with Tampa and Dallas kind of firmly in place.
I think Ottawa's the one that is most interesting to me, and we're going to talk to Carter Hutton in a little bit about goaltending, because Allmark is week to week now, and they need to find some sort of goaltending substance, because they are, as you mentioned it, they're kind of right in there, 4th in the wild card, and without Allmark, I don't know what their future looks like. They really need him to come back. So what's available right now, if the goalie market is heating up? Is there somebody that the Ottawa Senators want to grab to try to tread water? And then Montreal has just been an exciting one. Like you mentioned it, they're on a hot streak right now. Lane Hudson is really putting his name into the Calder discussion, but I don't know how much they can do, how long they can do this for. It's been really impressive. You mentioned the teams that they've beaten, and they're teams that are the top of the NHL, but I don't know, would they want to go and try to buy at the trade deadline? I don't see that. I don't see them trying to think that this is like the pathway for them. I still feel like their window is a little bit down the road, but when you're this close, like you're Calgary, you're Vancouver, and you're this close, are you thinking a little differently about the trade deadline, which is coming up, and maybe getting a little over-aggressive?
Well, I think each of these 2 teams at different spaces, 4 total, are in far different spots, right? There's expectation for Vancouver, and there's a lot of turmoil, of course, in Vancouver, but there's expectation. There's maybe the want to make a big move, at least supplement a roster that was supposed to be, you know, pretty easily, at least in the playoff discussion, and the expectation
Vancouver has to make the
playoffs is that they would be back.
I don't think there's another option.
But really, there's only, as long as LA keeps it up, there's only 1 spot. So it could get a little nervy, right? And if you're a team that has expectations and there's no room for error, then it puts you in a bit of a difficult position, whereas Calgary, who's right in the same ballpark as Vancouver, can play freely because there's absolutely no expectation. And maybe it's a little bit different with Ottawa, but Ottawa has all the pressure in the world to take the step finally, right? And you get Allmark, and you get the run from Allmark, and you're thinking, okay, we finally have it here despite the division being very competitive. But without their goaltender, what does it look like? And again, for Montreal, I don't expect them to make these moves to really force the issue, but it'll be easier playing and competing in that playoff race when there aren't any expectations as it compares to the Ottawa Senators. So four teams, likely with two maximum spots, and all of them kind of have far different situations and circumstances surrounding this chase. Again, it's a little bit early. Montreal probably were just getting them at the right time, and they're a little ahead of their skis, at least in terms of where they should be. But there's a good possibility that we have really good races and a possibility that we get five or six playoff teams.
The thing that surprised me the most when we were looking at the standings is the Pittsburgh Penguins, right out of a wild card spot, but basically tied with the Canadiens with 41 points. They have a minus 27 goal differential, and I think we left them for dead months ago. I don't think they occupied much space in my heart or my mind over the last stretch, but they have put themselves in the conversation. This is what's going to be interesting when it comes to the trade deadline. The situation that Kyle Dubas has found himself in, and the Pittsburgh Penguins, and Sidney Crosby wanting to get another chance at a playoff, maybe. I wonder how that influences their trade deadline decisions, because literally a month ago, 2 months ago, nobody was thinking about the Pittsburgh Penguins, and now they've put themselves in the conversation. So what does that mean for them when the trade deadline comes around? Is there some last push? Do they see what the Washington Capitals are doing and Alexander Ovechkin and be a little bit jealous in a sense of that he's getting this opportunity because their team is, you know, obviously the top of the Metro and they're going to be in the playoffs? I don't know what's going to happen to the Penguins, but they have surprised me just at how they've quietly snuck back into relevancy.
Yeah, well, if it works out for Pittsburgh, it would be a lot like Washington last year, where it's an objectively bad team that gets in the playoffs. Like, it kind of feels like there are seven playoff teams in both conferences, and every other team isn't, you know, at least in the conversation of championship caliber. And I think you could probably say that about the other seven, where, yeah, you can make the argument for them going on a run and making something of it. So there's pretty clearly 14 pretty good teams, and the rest not really. So they're not really, at least in the conversation around a Stanley Cup. I don't want to say that they're all bad, but they're not anything more than mediocre, probably. And for that reason, yeah, you want to get in the playoffs, but maybe you don't want to put yourself in a position where you're mortgaging the future in order to run potentially into the Florida Panthers or the aforementioned Washington Capitals in the first round. But I guess on both sides of the ledger, we just saw this in the NFL with the Detroit Lions getting that win over the Minnesota Vikings and how it opens themselves up being in the one seed. It's not the same in the NHL, but if there are only seven good teams in each conference, having the best record in the conference will surely be valuable, because you might be meeting a team with a negative 30 goal differential in the first round of the playoffs, and that should be not a layup, not a bye, but something that at least resembles that.
And just a nice to have a different opponent once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
Same, too, that the Leafs have cycled through over the last little while. All right, we mentioned it. We've got the Leafs and the Flyers on Sportsnet Ontario at 7:30. Our text line is open at 590-590. Standard message and data rates apply. We're halfway through the Leafs season, 41 games through. What's the biggest surprise for you? We'll try to sprinkle your answers in throughout the rest of the show. And we'll bring in Luke Fox now of Sportsnet, who's getting us set for the game tonight. Luke, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We're good. I know you wrote an article basically answering all of our questions, so we're going to kind of parse through it. But it is halfway through the Maple Leafs season, and we're going to ask our listeners what the biggest surprise for them are for them. And you had goaltending. I think that's a really fair answer, because I don't know what I expected. But not this, not having one of the best tandems when healthy in the NHL. So when you landed on your biggest surprise, goaltending seemed to be the one for you.
Yeah, and that's not a knock on Anthony Stolarz and Joseph Woll. I think everyone knows those are both really good goalies. But coming into the season, I circled the net as one of the biggest question marks facing the Leafs. You know, neither of those guys had appeared in so many as 30 games in a single season. So it was, can they stay healthy? Can they handle a starter-like workload? And not only have they answered the bell, well, injuries aside, but in terms of performance, not only have they answered the bell, but they're the top team in the East when it comes to team save percentage. They're third overall. The goaltending is one of the greatest strengths of the Leafs. And I think it's been fantastic. You know, a little bit of luck in that when Joseph Woll started the season hurt with a groin pull, Anthony Stolarz just snatched the ball and ran with it. Then they had both guys going for a while. Stolarz now is out with a pebble that he needed removed from his knee. Still isn't skating yet, so we might not see him for a while. But Wohl has played really admirably in his absence. So, yeah, just the fact that they have the best goaltending in the conference, that's a surprise to me and a pleasant one. And especially when you look back on all their playoff series, how many times can you say that the Leafs dressed the better goalie? I got one, and that was when Samsonov outdueled Vasilevsky, and they won that series. So if they can get this level of goaltending, I think it really bodes well for the spring.
Yeah, that seems almost impossible in hindsight that Ilya Samsonov was able to outduel Andrei Vasilevsky, but it is in the history books. It did, in fact, happen a couple seasons ago. So the question marks then shift. I mean, there's still some question marks about the goaltending in that, well, one of them's not available right now, and Joseph Wall, rigors of a whole NHL season, we're not there yet. But less questions being asked on a night-to-night basis, given that the performances have been very good. So the question marks, again, they shift, and I think the biggest one for the second half would be just the health of Auston Matthews. It's definitely going to be the main talking point, at least for the next 5 weeks in advance of the Four Nations faceoff. But the conversation today is different than it was, say, Friday before Matthews made his weekend return. So how has the weekend adjusted the way you feel about this storyline and Matthews' future here moving forward, at least in the short term?
It makes me cautiously optimistic. I thought he looked phenomenal in that Boston game in particular, looked shot out of a cannon. You know, that he had a lot of time off to rest, but the last time he was off, he didn't come back his first game and look that dominant. That whole line was fantastic. And you see the trickle effect that he has on Matthew Knies. I don't think it's a coincidence that the guy's first hat trick happens to come with a healthy Auston Matthews. He makes everyone better. And it's not just the points. You know, he's produced. He's got on the score sheet in both the games over the weekend since he got back. But he's out there blocking shots. He actually threw a couple nice hits. He's just a really smart player. And even if he's operating at 80%, say 70%, he still makes the Leafs better. Now, it's only been two games, right? And he's already needed two set times to step away and rest whatever that it is that ails him. So it's kind of, we're on pins and needles here. I think ever since he came out and said that he's not entirely sure that this is something he'll be able to put behind him this season, everyone's going to be on high alert. That's why I kind of circled that as the biggest question facing them in the second half. It comes baked in with the questions about Four Nations. Should he not participate? How they use LTI? How Matthews, it's something less than 100%. How does that affect Trey Living's approach to the trade deadline? It kind of affects everything going forward here in the next few months.
Yeah, we're talking to Luke Fox ahead of the Leafs playing the Flyers once again. Let's look back at that Sunday night game, because if we're talking injuries, I want to ask you about Jake McCabe, of course, a really scary situation. We were also in the building, so we could feel like that really uncomfortable feeling watching him try to struggle to get up and clearly laboring. So obviously not in the lineup tonight. Let's think, because of his history with some head injuries, let's just say he's out for a little bit longer than a week. How do you feel like they will shake out this blue line? Because there's a couple, like we're going to see Connor Timmins tonight, but there's a couple ways that they could do some of these pairings. The Jake McCabe and Tanev pairing was the best. Like, it was dynamite, and that won't be in operation tonight. So how do you think he's going to work through the D pairings if McCabe is a little bit slower to return?
Yeah, well, the plan right now is to keep Morgan Rielly with Philip Myers. You know, Brubé's really like that. Myers is happy to stay at home, and Morgan Rielly can get up in the rush a little bit more, which, you know, something the coach is pushing the guys to do. I think he's realized that there has been an absence of production from the back end. So I think Myers will be the stay-at-home guy, and Rielly can rush up a little bit. Tanev will partner with Oliver Ekman-Larsson, which I like. I mean, for one, Tanev makes everyone he's with better, but it also gets Ekman-Larsson on his natural left side. I haven't loved him when he's on his right. And then on the third pair, you got Timmins, who had been a healthy scratch for a few games, drawing back in with Simon Benoit, who I thought had a fantastic game against the Flyers. I thought he was really physical, very engaged. I expect him to be pretty emotional again tonight. And then you hope Timmins, you know, getting healthy scratched, maybe it's a bit of a wake-up call, because he did have a really nice stretch earlier in the season. You can't really replace Jake McCabe. You know, I think he just brings an element that is so desperately needed the Leafs back end. And with Tanev, he formed one of the best shutdown pairs in the whole league. Crazy to think that the leading plus minus guys on the Leafs are Tanev and McCabe. And that's with them getting the toughest forward matchups, starting in their own zone, killing penalties, all that. And they still are able to tilt the ice the right way. So this is a tough loss for the Leafs. I guess it's good that it's happening in early January, but I'd like to see this team take a run at winning the division, winning the conference, like getting a better seeding in the playoffs. And in order to do that, I think you need McCabe back sooner than later.
Yeah, every time you kind of clear the path, another hurdle seems to be set down in front of the Maple Leafs, and they're still right there, right in the thick of the race, right there with the Florida Panthers for the top spot. But a healthy roster, as you've seen with the forward group, makes a big difference. Certainly made a big difference for the top line, the scoring, Matthew Knies in particular, as you mentioned. You guys are mentioning the guys playing tonight on the back end. At least 50% of the blue line will be Benoit, Myers, Timmins. I wonder how many of those players do you expect to see if you're forecasting all this on a playoff roster night one?
Well, if everyone's healthy, probably two of them, maybe one of them. If they go, I really think their trade priority is a centerman that can play in the middle six, the best guy that they can get, the best guy available. What's interesting is we still don't really have a clear picture of who the clear sellers are. I mean, the Flyers definitely are, but they don't have a lot of rentals. I floated out the idea of Scott Laughton as a guy maybe the Leafs can look at. But all of a sudden, the wild card race in the East is so jumbled that, you know, teams that are still in it aren't ready to sell yet. So we'll see if things loosen up and there's more teams that become clear sellers in the next month or so. But I still believe the Leafs' priority on the trade market is a centerman, and then maybe secondarily looking for a depth defenseman.
We're chatting with Luke Fox of Sportsnet, head of the Leafs and Flyers tonight. Is it safe to say that Reeves being put in the lineup tonight might be time to see a fight if he's going to avenge the Jake McCabe injury?
Well, yeah, he hasn't had one all year, which is a bit of a head scratcher considering that's part of his job description. He wasn't in the lineup though last game. You know, he's been a healthy scratch for a couple, and Berube wouldn't go so far as to say that when he met with reporters in Philly, but he did say he wanted more size and physicality in his lineup tonight. He thought, you know, the Flyers were running around a little bit. So, I dug up an old clip from 23 when Reeves was with the Minnesota Wild and Hathaway was with the Bruins, and they got into it and almost fought, and then Hathaway went to the bench. So there's a history here. Domi has a bit of a history with Hathaway as well. And the fact that, as we were talking about, they put out one of their key defensemen for at least a week, maybe longer, we could see a little bit of revenge tonight.
Yeah, I don't know if it'll come from Reeves. I don't know if I'm wrong, but it seems like maybe they're in slightly different weight classes. I know Garnet Hathaway's a really tough guy, but the size of Reeves, I'm not sure. But I also, given what you know about Hathaway, he might just take it and get it over with because probably going to happen today, whatever's going to happen with Garnet Hathaway, given the injury to Jake McCabe. Just circling back a little bit on the trade deadline and what we might expect, like where would you put the desperation meter for the Maple Leafs in terms of making something happen this season? They were able to kind of reset the clock a little bit going to Brad Treliving. It kind of cooled everything down just a little bit. Like it wasn't going to last much longer in terms of the Dubas era, in terms of the kicks of the can. But with Treliving, it's like, okay, you got to give me time to get my team onto the ice. And he's definitely had a major imprint on this group. It looks and feels different, and the bodies are certainly turning over. But when you see the standings, when you see the contract situations, when you see the tenure now with Treliving being fairly deep into his stay, like how desperate, how aggressive do you expect the Maple Leafs to be in order to be a little bit better?
Definitely more aggressive than they were last time around. And I think the fact that John Tavares and Mitch Marner being in the final years of their deal plays a factor. Auston Matthews still in his prime. You only have so much of a window with him. I think that's a factor. They're actually getting good goaltending. They're playing a way that's more conducive to playoff success in terms of locking down leads, being a really good third period team, being more patient all those things, I think, are indicators that this is a stronger team to bet on than last year's version. The other thing that I think will spur action is the fact that Brendan Shanahan, how much is he in the ear of Bradtree Living? He's in the final year of his deal. We saw Kyle Dubas get pretty aggressive when he thought his time might come to an end. You know, is it the same with the president? So is there some urgency from up top? Does Trey Living feel pressure from the president to push in a little bit farther? Now, in saying that, what chips do they have to play? They don't have a first rounder. They absolutely have a second rounder that I would say is good as gone. That's on the table for sure. But do you go so far as to put an Easton Cowan into play? Do you go so far as to put a Fraser Minton into play? I think they're going to be really reluctant to do that. And if they do, my guess would be it would be for a player with some term and be a real impact player that comes in at the top of the lineup, not, you know, a middle six guy.
I think we got time for one last one, kind of related. Obviously, a lot of buzz around Jonathan Toews maybe making a return to the NHL after a couple seasons, dealing with some health issues. Is that something that you think the Maple Leafs are interested in learning more about, if he's available, if he's going to be back in shape?
That's the not trading Cowan route for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, you have to be interested, right? You wouldn't be doing your job if you don't give Toews a phone call and find out where he's at. You know, just consummate leader, centerman. I have my reservations on how much of an impact he can make. This is a fast game, and he's been away quite a while. And I think it's a fantastic story. If he really does want to make an earnest go of it and play more hockey and get back to the NHL, I'm rooting for him. I think pretty much every hockey fan will be, and the Leafs should make a phone call and poke around. I think it would be a lot of pressure for him to go from not being in the league at all to coming in to this hot market. I think it would be a real difficult decision, and I don't know if the player would make Toronto his first choice. But for sure, the Leafs should at least inquire and maybe go send a scout to wherever he's skating and see how good he looks. I mean, we kind of saw this last different scenario, but we saw this with Phil Kessel, right? It's like a name brand guy. He wants back in, and the Canucks took a look, but then ultimately decided this guy doesn't have it anymore. And it, you know, it's a young man's sport, so I'm rooting for him. But I just pumped the brakes on the hype train about Toews being an impact guy this playoffs.
And a completely different situation, right? Like, you could hide Kessel on a fourth line and hope he could get one. But Toews, if he's coming in, has to play a big role. We got 30 seconds, Luke. The most interesting mentor on the mentors trip that you have uncovered so far.
Oh, boy. Well, it's got to be Joe Thornton. Mm-hmm. You know, just the fact that he, former Leaf coming back. But there's some good ones. You know, Steven Lorenz's dad, like, he is so stoked. Apparently last night, he after having dinner with, like, Wendell and Jumbo and everyone, he texted Steven, "This is effing awesome." You know, he's just, he's fantasy camp for this guy because he grew up a Leafs fan. So really cool stories. I like the mentorship.
Who did Berube bring?
No one. Yeah. They had the option. Trainers.
Because I thought, remember Max Kruman came with Dubas.
My favorite Dubas story.
Yeah. No, we asked Berube. He said, he smiled. He said, yeah, I didn't bring anyone this time. But cool tradition, though.
It is very cool. All right, Luke, we appreciate you taking the time before a game to tee it up for us, Leafs and Flyers at 7:30. Appreciate it and enjoy.
All right, enjoy the hockey. Thanks.
That's Luke Fox of Sportsnet. At 7:30, we'll have that game up on Sportsnet Ontario. We've got Edmonton and Boston on Sportsnet West and Sportsnet 1 at 7. Vegas and San Jose, a little budding rivalry, 10:30 p.m. on Sportsnet 1. Calgary and Anaheim on Sportsnet West at 10 p.m. Who would you bring as your mentor?
Oh, boy. Put me on the spot.
I know mine.
Okay, what's yours?
Chris Cuthbert.
Oh, God.
What do you mean, oh, God? His stories he could tell. He would mentor me.
He could mentor you now without a trip, and you don't ask for such mentorship. So that's just...
Just the first one that came to my mind.
Okay. Well, I guess we could share it then.
Yeah, you guys can join custody of CeCe.
We can talk a little bit more about that in the break, but also what Luke says about what the Maple Leafs might be adding. How aggressive are you if you're adding another depth defenseman? I'm not really sure.
Wait, we'll be right back on the Fan Pregame.
Everything you need to know about the Raptors and the biggest stories around the NBA. Smith and Jones. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Fan pregame on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. A little later, you can choose from a sampling of hockey games. Leafs and Flyers on Sportsnet Ontario. Calgary and Anaheim on Sportsnet West. Edmonton and Boston, Sportsnet West and Sportsnet 1. And Vegas and Golden State Warriors. Vegas and San Jose on Sportsnet 1. Also, TGL Golf makes its debut tonight, 9 o'clock. So I will be tuning in.
And you'll have a best bet later, too.
I might have a best
I don't know how you're handicapping the TGL, but I admire the courage to wade into those waters.
As soon as you can get a chance to bet something new, I'm in on it. That's it. We're going to bring in Carter Hutton in about 5 minutes. But we have to give you a Blue Jays-related update. It's nothing crazy. But we have been trying to wade the waters of rumors and... We're going to give you a Bob Nightingale update. So, per Bob Nightingale, the Blue Jays keep offering mountains of cash, but can't find anyone to take it. They've offered more than $700 million for Juan Soto, as we knew that. They are willing to spend at least $250 million for Corbin Burns. They are outbid for Max Fried. They have an offer for Anthony Santander, and they're showing strong interest in Bregman and Alonso, too. So, the big thing is that this is obviously the final year before Vlad and Bo leave town as free agents. Per Bob Nightingale, Bichette is as good as gone, with no real interest in returning, friends say. The kicker here. Guerrero and the Blue Jays are at least $100 million apart, with Guerrero seeking at least $450 million. If Guerrero doesn't receive an extension by spring training, he'll test free agency. If Guerrero doesn't return to the Blue Jays, he would love to be with the Red Sox, friends say, which may be why the Red Sox are hesitant in their pursuit of Bregman.
So overpaying is never like in the best practices handbook. I guess that's kind of an oxymoron because the handbook would be best practices. But like we're reaching the point here where if you don't do that, it's all going to blow up in the Blue Jays' face.
Yeah.
Like I don't even care that it's the Red Sox because it won't even matter where he's playing at that point.
I kind of care that it's the Red Sox.
Well, at least for me, it's like, okay, go be good for 5 years, Red Sox, with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Maybe win a World Series. That'll be great, I guess, for them. But it's not like the Jays are going to be any sort of competitive within that 5 to 10 year window or whatever it's going to be, because it's going to be barren, absolutely barren by that point. If you lose Bo Bichette, if he's going to walk, and if you let Vladimir Guerrero Jr. walk, and I'm not saying necessarily to give all the money to Bo, but to prevent yourself from truly hitting rock bottom as an organization, you can't let Vladdy walk. So if it's $100 million you got to make up, you got to bite the bullet and do it, because honestly, the repercussions is more than just losing your first baseman, more than him going to an American League East rival. It is starting from scratch with your organization.
It's losing like all of the
losing
goodwill.
Your soul.
Okay, it's a bit dramatic, but yeah, it's losing all of the goodwill that you might have built up with this fan base over the last couple of years in playoff runs where people were excited about the Blue Jays and the potential and having Vlad when he made his debut. I remember when Vlad made his debut, I like ran down to the Rogers Center to be there because I wanted to see what Vlad would mean, and I got his jersey. And it just, there was so much excitement around that, and that excitement has really died off. And that tiny little bit of hope that maybe Blue Jays fans have, it all surrounds around Vladdy helping bring in X, Y, and Z. But if you lose him and Bo Bichette, or even just Vlad by himself, I just don't see a way out of this that isn't massive rebuild and losing so much excitement and appreciation that the fan base had like across this whole country for the Blue Jays. It's really drastic, as you mentioned, if you lose both of them. And if it's $100 million apart and he's seeking, what, $450 million? Like, $450 million
at this time next year.
That's
right. He's going to. There's no way around not giving him $450 million, or like you're just ready to say goodbye. And they might be ready to say goodbye because their calculations, that being Atkins and Shapiro, say, like, we can't give a first baseman that much money. That's not in the best practices handbook. Of course not. But there are exceptions to everything. And the exception here would be that Vladdy is the face of the franchise. He is what's holding something together that is hanging on by threads at this point. Again, it's so obvious what needs to happen. They need to overspend to keep Vlad, and they probably need to trade Bo Bichette because, frankly, I don't think anyone could feel comfortable entering into that long-term partnership, and I don't think Bo, as Nightingale outlines, wants to do that. You can recoup something for Bo and you can recoup, you can save grace to just the bare minimum if you just give the money to Vlad to ensure that you're not looking at this time next year at a complete wasteland.
Oof, complete wasteland. At least the Rogers Center is not a wasteland.
It's nice.
That's about all we got going for us right now. All right, let's bring in Carter Hutton to help us tee up the rest of the games on the network tonight. Daily Faceoff, of course, former NHL goaltender Carter. Happy New Year. Can we still say that? Is this the last that you can say it a week into the new year? Or?
Shut it down, Carter.
I don't know. I think we're too young, honestly. I'm knocking on 40's door, but I think you got to be like older. That's like, I was talking about that with Gord Stellick today. I was on the air and he was hitting me with the Happy New Year. I'm like, Gord, it's gone, buddy. We're on.
Okay.
We're
but we haven't spoken since last year, that's so right. I thought it was like courteous to say Happy New Year, Carter, but you're right. I'm right on the edge of it being just like, give it up.
Let it slide because it's my first time on the show in the new year.
That's
but,
what
I
thought.
Think moving forward, let's get past it. Yeah.
It's acceptable.
I like it, though. I like it.
Okay. Never again will I ever utter those words. Okay. Let's talk about Joseph Woll to start because we got Leafs Flyers on a little later on Sportsnet Ontario, and it's been a really great to see him have a moment. I mean, obviously at the unfortunate expense of Anthony Stolarz being out, but he seems to have grabbed this opportunity and kind of run with it. His last couple starts, he seems like he's gaining this confidence. The team's playing really well in front of him. Is this the Joseph Woll that you kind of believed was in there all along and he's getting an opportunity to kind of claim a one starter?
I think so. I think this is a great case of Joseph Woll just, you know, having the keys of the castle, right? I think Anthony Stolarz came in and early in training camp losing Joseph Woll, and I think there was a bit of a black cloud over him, especially after the way the playoffs ended, losing him for game seven when he had been, you know, Toronto's one of the best players during that series against Boston. So I think for Joseph Woll, it's just that confidence to play and know he can play and have some more sustainable games without that injury, right? And during this little run without Stolarz, he's made a lot of big saves. He's been called upon. He's been steady. He just exudes that confidence in the net where you can see it throughout this lineup. So I think that's something for him to have a little bit of a feather in his cap here, just moving forward, knowing he can play more than once a week and play well at that point. So this is a really dynamic hockey team we're seeing here now. And I think they're playing the right style of hockey, and having a confident goalie in Joseph Woll is, I think, throughout this team, just confidence throughout.
The Leafs were without Joseph Woll. At least he was on the bench for the first of two meetings between the Leafs and Flyers. The first happened over the weekend, Sunday night. The Maple Leafs got the victory. It was the battle of the two tallest goaltenders in history, at least by my measurements in that game. I'm sure as a goaltender that got your attention that there were two beasts out there, at least in terms of height, and Dennis Hildeby and Ivan Fedotov. But like, they looked different. And I want you to kind of outline the challenges when you are that big. Now, you aren't that big, but you understand, obviously, that there are physics behind it and the challenges that a bigger goaltender might
actually... Long ways
down,
a long ways up.
Yeah. We saw with Fedotov that he was just like, the rebound control was a little bit difficult because it felt like, I don't know, maybe there was a little less control of the massive body that he has to carry around on a day-to-day basis. Although with Hildeby, it didn't look like that. Like, how do you break down the challenges and the skills of the larger goaltenders like we saw over the weekend?
You know, I was on NHL, they have me at 6 feet, but I swear I'm 6'1". I have this argument all the time with friends and family. I'm 6'1". So I wasn't overly big. I think that sweet spot is in that 6'3", 6'4" range. When you start to get too big, I played against a guy like Ben Bishop for a long time. More holes are created, especially with post integration. When I talk about post integration, I don't want to use this big word, but when we move into our post from any position in the crease, where now more holes are created and shooters are so smart, videos are breaking down. And Hildeby, I think because he's been over here a little bit longer, he is adjusted to the international play in North America, right? In North America, there's more traffic. It's a smaller rink. There's just more sight lines you have to fight to see. When I watch Ivan Fedotov, it's the fact of the matter is he's still so aggressive, right? He's out of his crease. He kind of gets a little bit sloppy. And that was his first game in a while. He didn't play for the whole month of December. So I thought he did a pretty good job. But being a bigger guy, the more you can simplify your game and let it come to you, you have that advantage. But these big goalies at that size, more holes are created. There's definitely an advantage. But to an extent, you get a little bit too big. And I think Hildeby does a great job of managing his size. And during that game, I didn't love the first goal that he gave up. So for him to stay with it and just be rock solid after that, that's a good job of him being a younger guy. Because, you know, you can feel like the world starts to crumble on you a bit when you give up a goal early and you kind of oh man, do I not have it tonight? Start to second guess yourself. And I thought he did a great job of sustaining the rest of the game and helping the Leafs win that one.
Yeah, Justin and I were doing the intermissions on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and Justin mentioned a good point. Like in a couple of Hildeby's games, he'd had a goal or two goals within the first couple minutes. So you're right, like that fortitude to be like, you know what, like I can shut this down and we can win this. I think that's coming with experience, and the more opportunities he gets to play at the NHL level, I feel like I'm
next
calmer.
Next pass would not be giving up those goals, well, but yeah, he bounced back after giving up
the steps, goals. Justin.
Yeah, baby steps.
Yeah, it can't always be perfect, right? And I think that's where it just goes to show you like that grooming in the American League and getting to play some more games and just take some of your bumps and bruises down below, which is important, right? Because you start doing it at the NHL level, there's nowhere to hide, right? There's five different cameras. I remember doing goalie reviews like after each game with my goalie coach, and I could lie and say it was tipped because the camera was so far up north in the nosebleed section. Where you get in the NHL, there's five different views, slow-mo cameras. They could see my eyes were closed when the puck was going in, so I had no excuses.
That's good. The cameras have screwed you over too. We're talking to Carter Hutton of Daily Faceoff and former NHL goaltender, of course. So Justin and I led the show by talking about how tight the playoff race is, specifically with a lot of these Canadian teams that are like right on the outside looking in or right in right now. And Ottawa is one that's a coin flip right now because they're fourth in the wild card, but they don't have Ullmark. And I don't know exactly how long it's going to be, so week to week, but do you think the Sens need to capitalize on whatever goaltending market there is out there? Is there somebody that maybe can come in and help with this goaltending inconsistency that they've had? Because Ullmark is the guy that they got, but he's not available right now. And would they be wasting maybe their playoff potential by not pouncing on somebody?
You know, and honestly, I think tonight is a great measuring stick, right? Mm-hmm. They've just, at the end of that road trip, they were obviously shipped out because of the World Juniors, and now they have to go and play in Detroit, and Detroit's playing well. So I think this is where a game where you're going to have your leadership trying to buy in. Brady Tkachuk, I think he's going to try to will these guys to victory. But without Linus Ullmark, I think in the future, depending on how long he is out, it becomes very worrisome because I don't think Forsberg is the guy that's going to bring you to the promised land. So then you look at the market, you look who's available. You know, there's obviously John Gibson's name's been tossed around. How much is the Anaheim Ducks going to retain? Then I also think there's Karel Vemelka out in Utah, who's played very well this year with Connor Ingram being out. Is he a guy that could be potentially on the move? Where I think you need to do it sooner than later, right? When you talk about the Ottawa Senators, and especially in the East. When I look at the East, I look at seven teams that are playoff teams, right? Yeah. And Tampa Bay, as of late, have dropped a few games, but that eighth spot is up for grabs, right? Right now, Montreal's in that spot. Tomorrow morning, we're going to wake up, and there's going to be a new team in that spot. And it seems like it's going to be a battle to get in, and I think Ottawa is one of those teams that they need to solidify that goaltending position. And if Ullmark's out for a long time, I wouldn't be surprised if they try to pull the trigger on something.
We are chatting with former NHL goaltender Carter Hutton. I want to do phase two. Maybe it's not phase two. Maybe it's phase three or four. But phase two, since we learned who the Canadian goaltenders were in that conversation, December 4th, we figured out who the three goaltenders are going to be. That was about 5 weeks ago. And here are the stats for the three Canadian goaltenders since then. Aiden Hill, 912. Bennington, 900. Sammy Montembeau, who I don't know how he made that team, 893. Logan Thompson and Stuart Skinner, who did not make the team, 921 and 917, respectively. Has anything changed for you in terms of this conversation that clearly isn't as contentious anymore as it pertains to maybe who should be starting the first game or the most important games, and whether or not we should still be second-guessing these picks?
Well, I think you have to second guess it the whole time, right? I think the team was picked so early, right? Which is something I didn't love. And the fact of the matter is they had to make those decisions. And the fact that it got leaked before, I would have loved to see it a little more hidden and we could build into it a bit. And for me, I think it is going to be who's hot at the right time, right? It's a short tournament. Aiden Hill and Jordan Binnington have that winning pedigree. For me, the one that I just didn't really get was Sam Montembeau. I just don't think he's shown enough the way that Montreal plays. If Canada gets in a game where you need a big save, and he hasn't really been in those moments, right? Where that's where I don't think is your number three, you don't need that. Where the way Logan Thompson has played, he's played for Vegas. He's been in playoff situations. He's been in tight games. And he's been great. He's been absolutely great. I would have rather seen a Cam Talbot or Marc-Andre Fleury than Sam Montembeau. What's done is done. And they needed to name the team early. And I think at this point, we're going to see Aiden Hill. We're going to see Jordan Binnington. And I think it's going to be one where maybe one gets a game here or there, and whoever grabs the ball and runs with it is going to be the guy we see for the rest of the tournament.
Where are you at with Stuart Skinner? You know, the fluctuation in terms of the confidence seems to be unending with him, but he's played really well lately, and that's probably part and parcel with the Oilers playing some really great hockey as well.
I think so. I think it is a product of a team game where now they've moved some guys around, right? They're bouncing out to the lineup. I think they're trying to evenly divide where they distribute guys coming from. I think tonight will be a challenge for him. He's played very well as of late. And when he is struggling, he is a goalie that chases the puck. When I talk about chasing the puck, getting outside outside his posts all the time. He is a big guy. There's a bigger goalie, but he's in that sweet spot where he has enough size, he can just fill net and let the game come to him. But when he's not playing well, he starts to chase outside the net. It's not necessarily that first save. It's where the rebound goes from there. And from there, at times, Skinner can be a bit sloppy where he's kind of dialed that back in now, and I think Edmonton in general is playing better. And they're in Boston tonight, and Boston's been struggling. Edmonton's, you know, they've been off for a few days, so I think this is going to be a good challenge for Skinner going into a tough rink where they need to respond, because Boston's lost four straight, and in two of those games, their last two, they've scored four goals and their goalie hasn't been great. So I think Jeremy Swayman's going to be up for a challenge tonight, so it should be an interesting one in the East Coast.
I guess we'll talk about those American goaltenders like Connor Hellebuck. He's just unbelievable. Obviously,
talk about picked the team too soon. I mean, Swayman, how he's on that team based on this year.
Yeah, we just saw them on Saturday night, and Swayman didn't look great either. So maybe both teams, all four teams of the Four Nations, will be dealing with early pick regrets.
But it doesn't matter because Connor Hellebuck.
Yes, that's what I think. Like USA, it's almost like, does it even matter who the third goalie is? Because at that point, I feel like it's going to be Hellebuck, and worst case, you have Ottinger, right? So where Canada, it's like we don't really have that one guy. That's where I think every guy is more important.
Yeah, so Connor Hellebuck looking for a win 300 tonight. I think he missed it the other day, but another opportunity tonight. Vezina favored by miles, of course. I wonder if he should be more seriously considered in the Hart Trophy. Like, I know it's hard for a goaltender to win that, but if you look at what he's been able to do for his team this year, and if they can do something, you know, in the postseason, that's another question. He's got the fifth best odds. Like, should we be talking about it a bit more?
I know it's one of those ones. I think it's an argument all the time you hear, just the fact that they don't play every single game, right? Where positional players are playing all the time. And for Connor Hellebuck, he plays so many games, and this year is going to be no different, right? He's already set himself to play in the 60s along with the Four Nations Cup. So I think as a Winnipeg fan and a fan of Connor Hellebuck is he going to be ready for the playoffs, right? Because you look at last year, that Colorado series, he wasn't great, right? He talked about he was playing good, he felt good, but he didn't get the results. For me, how much do you rest him going into the series, right? How much games can you spot Eric Comrie in there to try to get him a little rest? Because he's a guy that wants to play all the time, but at some point, we're hockey players, right? We all want to play. Every guy wants to play, injured, whatever it is. You have to take it out of his hands and give him the rest so he's ready to go at the right times.
So in goaltending circles, is this Avalanche goaltender story this year going to be the stuff of legends? Like, you're going to be telling your grandkids about the time that, you know, the Avalanche swapped out both their goaltenders, brought in Mackenzie Blackwood, who turned in a 940 save percentage and potentially led them to another Stanley Cup. I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but like, this is like a, not a franchise altering, definitely a season altering move pulled off by management. And Mackenzie Blackwood, who had all these question marks surrounding him, suddenly looks like the guy that could take them back to the promised land.
You know, I get a chance to work with Mackenzie in the summer. He's from my hometown of Thunder Bay, where we just produce goalies nonstop, right? We've had, you know, Matt Murray, Mackenzie
Blackwood. Why do we have a goaltending problem?
And another one, Carter George, who's just a starter at the World Juniors. So we've had a lot of good goalies coming out of Thunder Bay. But for Mackenzie, he's the guy I've always been jealous of. Like, I was in my prime in the NHL, and I would skate with him in the summer, and I couldn't hold a candle to what he could do physically. He just is in such control. He's a big guy. He's 6'4", about 230, 240. Looks like a football player, but he's athletic enough and flexible enough to do that. So he's had all the tools. Now at 28 years old, you're starting to see the experience come into play, and that is what I talk about is just going through your bumps and bruises and managing it. This guy get rushed to the NHL. He is in New Jersey. They don't have a great team. He kind of gets washed out of there. It's his fault, blah, blah, blah. And he moves on and he grows into who he has become now. And I had this conversation with this summer about how he's learned to care less, right? And I think as a fan from the outside, you're like, well, that's not what I want to hear, right? But as a goalie standpoint, we play so much. And if you have a bad game, you can't let it stay with you. If you have a good game, you can't let it stay with you either. You need to find like a happy medium where you can reset yourself each day and come to work. And I think Mackenzie Blackwood has found that playing in San Jose, where he knows he's on a bad team. He can't control it. Now he has this resume of experience to fall back on. And now he goes to a team like Colorado where he has a chance to flourish. And he's 7-1-1. He has a 938 save percentage. He's been a big difference maker. Now I think you're seeing that perfect symmetry of tools along with experience coming together at the right time. It's going to be fun to watch here as Colorado keeps winning games.
Yeah, you're going to be telling your grandkids about that one. I think so. I think that's definitely happening given your relationship with him. Last one for you. Yaroslav Askarov, in terms of big goaltending moves and acquisitions and guys who can change the fortunes, not yet fortunes for the San Jose Sharks, but like the Askarov addition, is that almost as important, maybe more important than even getting Celebrini, maybe more so than Smith, to be a little bit more on the conservative side there. Like, how big was getting Askarov for this group, for this team, which is definitely having a positive year, despite not having Mackenzie Blackwood anymore?
You know, I think a great example would be, like, we're in Leafland, right? We see it all the time, how the team played when Samsonov was struggling, right? You could see that confidence. You could see how they had no confidence. Now you get a goalie of the future, a guy that can play. It just makes guys play freer, right? You're not playing tense when you're questioning what shot's going to go in. Is he going to give up a bet? Who's showing up tonight? And he is a goalie who's been ready, I think, physically, right? Again, a circle back to Mackenzie. Askarov has the skills. He can do it. It's the fact of the matter is, now that he's got some seasoning in the American League, he's played good, he's played bad, he's took all his bumps and bruises in the minors, where when you get under the spotlight in the NHL, it's a little bit more daunting. And I think he's done a great job of that, especially in this new year, right? His last two wins against Jersey and another win against Tampa Bay. And he's been rock solid, I think, with a .923 save percentage, playing on arguably the worst team in the NHL. So I think the sky's the limit for him. And you look at Will Smith, you look at Celebrini, the confidence these young players have in San Jose, the future looks really bright.
Yeah, they're, like, fun to watch, like, and fun to cheer for, which, I mean, it wasn't like that for a little bit. So a couple young pups, and they love TikTok. Have you seen their TikToks, these guys?
I have.
It's kind of fun, it. Right?
That's like the new generation, right? Where yeah. I was like, I'd show up to the rink, I was scared to look at anybody. I like just kept my head down. I like, oh my God, I have to play tonight. Hopefully no one talks to me. The GM just walked by, I'm scared. Where these younger guys have more confidence. I love it. You even see it in the World Juniors, the celebrations and the attitude. I think it's a good change and it's good for the game of hockey.
I agree.
Look at us, just young people talking. Well, yeah, everybody else says Happy New Year. We're watching TikToks.
We're watching Celebrity do TikToks. So yeah, we're exactly. Really cool. Thanks, Carter. Appreciate you coming on. Great as always. We'll chat soon.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
That's Carter Hutton of Daily Faceoff, and of course, former NHL goaltender. That's gonna get the youths on TikTok.
No more Happy New Year's.
I won't say it again. I apologize if I've offended
any of our listeners. Unless Gord shows up.
If Gord, I said it to Gord when I saw him last week. That made sense. It was the second. So I've already used my Happy
greeting.
New Year to
it's
him.
A fair greeting.
Okay. Well, you know, I just saw Bourne for the first time, and I almost said it, and I was like, hi, Bourne. Because, you know, it is a bit late.
He was rushing out.
He was rushing out. Okay, let's do some best bets for tonight. Okay, I can't believe I'm doing this, but I'm feeling really good.
What makes you feel good?
About betting on the TGL, which is debuting tonight on Sportsnet. You can watch it at 9 p.m. Sportsnet 360. Because yesterday we had a great chat with Adam Stanley.
Right.
And as it always is, but he gave me a good feeling about my squad. And Justin and I drafted blind draft of the six TGL teams. And tonight we get our first head-to-head. We should almost do like an in-season cup. Sorry.
Well, we can. We definitely can.
Anyway, so
if you want to track that, I'm not going to track it.
No, I've already forgot how it works. Okay, so my team.
You're in it.
Yeah, but I haven't won in a long
Marchese's
time.
Marchese's just wiping the floor, you know, isn't
it's
he?
It's ridiculous. So one of my three teams for the TGL is New York, and we're facing off tonight, and it's New York versus the Bay.
Okay.
So my team, New York, Matt Fitzpatrick, Ricky Fowler, Xander Schauffele, and Cam Young.
Yeah, it's a good team.
They're minus -125 to win tonight. So I'm just...
The Bay was my first overall draft pick, wasn't it?
Yep. How do you feel about them?
I love them. Shane
and they're
Lowry,
not
right?
even favorites, so Min-Woo you picked
Lee.
Poorly.
Whatever.
I just want to get in on the TGL early and stake my claim as our handicapper
York,
of
you're,
the bets.
You're spending a lot on whatever. The New York Golf Club today.
I want to get fair. In on night one of TGL.
Okay. I will go to Sportsnet and the Oilers and Bruins tonight. I'm taking the alt line of Betano, plus +142, over 6.5. We have two of the highest scoring teams in the league since December 1.
Wild.
That is my new arbitrary cutoff, December 1.
Okay.
The Oilers are 4th. The Bruins are 7th. It is Swayman versus Skinner, two goaltenders that are pretty high on the list on paper, at least. But, you know, we were talking about the Bruins struggles. The Oilers might have to score a bunch given that there's some desperation on the Bruins side. So I'm taking the alt line over 6.5 plus +142. Oilers and Bruins fireworks on Sportsnet.
Oh, yeah, lots of fireworks tonight. Okay, well, Leafs and Philly.
Are there fireworks in the dome at the TGL Stadium? I wouldn't be surprised.
Oh, I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of expensive equipment. Be worried about burning it down. But the TGL Dome, I've been watching some behind-the-scenes videos. They were putting in the grass today. They got sand from Augusta.
There's got
to
be some.
I'm kind of campaigning somewhere. To go, so that's why I wanted to also put that as my first.
You'll have picks every day then.
Maybe I will, if I get a couple right. Okay, we got.
You wouldn't break them on.
We got Leafs and Philly at Sportsnet, Ontario up next, Edmonton and Boston. Sportsnet West and Sportsnet 1 at 7 o'clock. Do you think Ryan Reeves fights?
I'm going to say Max Domi steps up and does it instead.
He got fined $5,000.
Did he?
He might be shy.
We'll see. Okay. He can throw him with anyone.
All right, we'll see you guys tomorrow. Have a great night.
That was the Fan Pregame brought to you by Betano. The game starts now.